Welcome to the 19th episode of the It's Been Said podcast. I'm your host, SAI Executive Director Lisa Ramey. Each show is dedicated to conversations on leadership as we further SAI's mission to support, encourage, and develop Iowa's educational leaders and learners. We're excited this month to welcome Jenny Barnett, Superintendent of the Harlan Community School District. In this episode, you will hear how Harlan created a mental wellness continuum of supports by looking at the current services in the district, school, and community. Welcome, Jenny.
Thank you.
So, Jenny, why don't you tell our listeners a little bit about yourself and then about Harlan Community Schools?
Sure. So this is my 31st year in education. I started out as a special education teacher and then was a school guidance counselor, assistant principal, principal of an alternative school, and student services director. So the wellness and student wellness and student mental health has always been a really important piece of my career, and I'm very passionate about it. This is my third year at Harlan. We have about 1,400 students, and we're a 3A school. We're very rich in tradition in many things. So music, the arts, our athletics, and our academics. So it's just a really great place to be.
Awesome. Well, again, thank you for being here with us today. So Jenny, tell us why it's important to have a continuum of mental health supports in schools.
I think it's really important just to have an array of supports for students within the school setting. Traditionally, schools have a counselor, but they're often stretched very thin. So adding several layers of support allows schools to understand specific needs of students and overall improves the quality and the culture and of your academic and behavioral success of students.
Very good. So what are some of the primary mental health supports offered at Harlan Community School District?
So within Harlan, we offer quite a continuum of supports, and it starts with our school counseling departments. Who do many, many things, and they're really the leads in all of this. We have a student navigator at both at the high school for sure, and then someone who does similar work at the middle school, and they assist parents and students with specific school-based behaviors and can connect them with local and state wellness resources. We partner with Green Hills AEA and the juvenile court system and have a school-based interventionist. She's there 4 days a week. She focuses a lot on students that are grades 5th through 12th because the whole goal with juvenile court is to not have them adjudicated and to make sure they're coming to school. So a lot of her focus is on attendance, which always ties back to, not always, but often ties back to wellness and mental health and not feeling comfortable at school. We have school-based therapists. So we partner with local agencies, and we can talk a little bit more about that later, but who they are, but we do collaborate with them. And then we also have a social worker from Green Hills AEA that we operationally share 2 days a week. And then there's also many other free resources that all schools have available to them. Integrated health homes, Southwest Iowa. We work with the Southwest Iowa Mental Health Region and Disability Region. And those regions are throughout the state of Iowa. So there's many, many things that are free that are services that you just have to connect with.
Yeah, so you have quite the variety and continuum there of services.
Yes, we try just each round of support gets a little bit deeper, I guess. So, and how we can help all the way to the point where if someone would need a PMIC placement or something like that, that we at least know who to call to try to help us with some of those resources.
Yeah, that's fantastic. So, Jenny, how do you identify students who may be in need of any of those resources? And what does that process look like, I guess, at Harlan?
So I think it's just really important that you have a student services team at each building. So our elementary, our middle school, and our high school have teams that meet weekly. And those are led by either the guidance counselor or the navigator. So, and the principals are involved in those as well. So they have their lists of basically all of their students and look at that. And we call it a trifecta list or a deuce list. So they look at their academics, their attendance, and then their behavior referrals. And if they have, you know, if they are marked on three of those things that are above a threshold that they've decided, then they're high priority, I guess. So then they look at those students and figure out what are we doing and how are we intervening, whether it's academically, whichever. And then they look at their those that have two kind of two markers that are red or yellow and not green and doing well in, and go from there. So it seems like a daunting task to look at all students, but in my past life in Council Bluffs schools, we did the exact same thing and we had, you know, 9,000 students to look at. But once you break it down a little bit and you focus on those students that really truly need the help, that's how we do it. So it's just very important to have an ongoing meeting, whether it's every couple of weeks or every week, just to really check in on those kids that you know might be high priority. So that's how our team, how the process works. And they can also come from a referral from a teacher as well. So maybe they aren't on our list, but something is happening that week. So a teacher can come in, and then teachers are invited to come to those meetings as well to talk about those students specifically, because ultimately, oftentimes, they're helping us with those interventions as well.
Sure. Tell us about who serves on those teams in each of your buildings.
Sure. So the counselor, both counselors, like at the high school, for example, we've got two counselors, and then we would have our school-based interventionist, the school-based navigator, and then either the principal or the assistant principal. And then as the names come in, they do try to pick a teacher or two, especially at the high school, because it's just a little different because you're not, you know, you might have eight different teachers. So where is the problem lying? To bring a couple of teachers in to help problem solve, because sometimes it's just a matter of sitting down and building a relationship with the student to understand what their needs are. So picking that one person that maybe is that champion for that student. At the elementary school, it is the counselors and oftentimes a grade level teacher, and then both principals are involved in that as well. And then we do include our school-based therapists in those at times. So if it's students that are involved with the school-based therapist, they come to and help us. And that's what's great about that partnership with school-based therapy is, yes, we keep everything confidential, but it's nice to have other people around the table to help us problem solve that might not have a school brain, as I call it. So they can tell us, oh, have you thought about this or have you thought about that? So you just have a think tank to help you problem solve lots of different things, because each student is individual.
Right, right. You talked a little bit about this, but is there any other information around data? So what data do the teams consider as you determine if the student is in need of services, and then even maybe where at on the continuum of services?
Yeah, sure. So we look at attendance. So they've missed, and I think it's important when you do establish a team and you understand what data you're looking at. I mean, what does that look like? Is it attendance that they've missed X amount of days? You need to set your threshold as to what is that, so that like different people run those reports. So our school-based interventionists will run the attendance report and bring kind of who's on that list. And then the principal might run the behavior report and say, oh my gosh, you know, in the last 6 weeks, this student has had three referrals. What's going on? And then finally, just academically, teachers will usually give us that information. That's a little bit harder at the elementary because they're standards based, but you can pull grades and you can pull, and we use PowerSchool, but you can pull those out of a middle school and a high school, on a middle school and high school report pretty quickly, who's got D's and F's. And then they just compare those three pieces of data. At the elementary, their team is called the High Five. So they each member of the elementary team brings their top five students that they're concerned about. And then they talk about it in that way. So it's a little bit different, but they also have teachers that are with students, you know, their core group of students. So they have a little bit better eye, I guess, of that group of 30.
You mentioned that it sounds like the team sets the threshold. So give an example just around, let's use attendance, for example. What might be that threshold of number of absences missed?
Sure. So chronic absenteeism, I mean, if you miss 10% or more, so 18 days, so 9 days in a semester doesn't sound like very many. And even 18 days doesn't sound, that's 2 days a month, but it causes lots of gaps in learning and many other things too. So oftentimes it's even 2 days, and it depends on what month it is. But if they've hit, you know, if they hit that 10%, whatever month they're in, that's what they use for their attendance. So if it's the first semester and they've hit 9 days, they're, it's a concern. Now you look at that too. Were they sick? Were they, so you know, you weed out those, but that would be an example of attendance. Or if they're gone multiple days with an unexcused absence without us knowing, then we may even do a home visit or something like that.
Sure. Sure. Do you include, Jenny, both, I'll call them excused absences as well as unexcused absences?
We do, because we just feel it's important that an absence is an absence is an absence. So, and then we just dig down a little bit deeper on that as well. Oftentimes we've had to partner with doctor's offices and help them understand how important it is for them to work with us on, if the student was seen in the office, did they really need to be gone 3 days, or were they just sick one? Or if they were seen in the office, were they really sick? So just doing some education with parents that way too.
Yeah. Yeah, for sure. So Jenny, you know, and I've read, you know, the stigma around mental health and getting help and support. How do you address that and encourage that open dialogue, not only among maybe students, but their parents and the community?
And that's a very real thing, especially in rural communities, I think, because it's difficult sometimes to keep things confidential. And if you see a therapist in the office and then you see them in the grocery store, that might be uncomfortable. We have just tried to really explain how it will help. It will help students. And it's not that that parents always say, yep, I want to do that right away. So we try many other things ahead of time before we go the therapy route. But there are many things we try to do. We have kindness clubs in all of our in every single building. And so those clubs formed out of the Rachel's Challenge program we had a couple of years ago. And so then kindness clubs were formed, and that just, it just encourages more of an open dialogue that it's okay to understand and have empathy and be kind and non-judgmental with, and understand that everybody could be going through a tough time and we just need to learn to be empathetic. We really do promote that all information will be kept confidential as it relates to school-based therapy if it goes that route. And then our counselors at the elementary school, there's weekly counseling lessons for every single student. So that's just another way to really promote showing how to express your emotions and using some social emotional skills and taking those home to your parents so that they can do it too. I think another thing is just modeling that as teachers and as counselors, and just saying it's okay that we're, it's okay. I mean, Mental Health Awareness Month is in May, and so we try to promote some of those things. It is a hard thing. It's not easy, especially in a rural setting, because I came from a bigger setting where you can do it a little bit more inconspicuously. But I will tell you, once they get help, whether it's from a counselor or a student navigator or something, and that person champions them, they are some of the biggest cheerleaders, the parents and the students, of how well it helped. So that's another way, I guess, is just to spread the word by example.
Right. Yeah, for sure. Yeah. So are there specific strategies or programs implemented in Harlan to promote mental wellness among your students?
Yeah, so our elementary counselors use a second step curriculum because they, you know, have much more of a structured lesson every month. It's part of their specials. We promote service learning at the high school and in at the middle school in our community. So that's another way of promoting mental health wellness and just doing good for others. And then our kindness clubs, as I mentioned, are pretty active and they promote empathy and understanding. We also partner with lots of agencies. So NAMI, Family Connections, Green Hills AEA, and they provide services that we will promote if needed within our community. And again, I just think ultimately our teachers model how we should treat others, and they're very open to helping our students with mental health needs. An example might be in the middle school and the high school, the teachers welcome their students as they walk in the classroom each period. So they stand out the door and just say hello, you know, good morning, say their name. That seems like a little thing, but it really means a lot to kids that maybe don't have an adult that talks to them on a regular basis. We did an activity at the beginning of the year with the high school where they put every student's name up, so all 550 students, and each teacher went around and put if they had some kind of connection. So even if it was they're on my basketball team, or they're in student council, or they're in the kindness club. And then when they came to those that had no names, those are the ones that they targeted to be relationship building. So just making sure every student had a connected adult was important, because at the high school level, it just gets different, you know, and students become independent and they don't think they need you, but sometimes they do.
Right. Maybe even more so, right?
Yeah. So those are just some specific things. We also use restorative justice. We've just been trained this year through Green Hills AEA has provided that. So tomorrow, I think, is our last day of our team training. So a team from each level has been trained in restorative justice. And at the elementary, they also have circle time at least once or twice a week. So we're trying to implement lots of things that just help kids understand how to work together, because that's a huge thing. Yeah.
Restorative practices, kudos to you. That is really powerful when it's done well, right? But it takes time too. So thanks for committing to that as a system.
Yes, you're right. It takes time. And we did, we went back and forth, because sometimes you don't want to always just jump on the latest bandwagon. So we use a Boys Town program, the well-managed classroom. And that was before I got there at the elementary. So it was really a look at how will restorative justice layer in with what we're already doing. And I think that's important too. And there's definitely ways to do that. And our assistant principal who does the discipline was not really sure about it. And then once she went to the training, she came back gung ho, like, this is great. So I think sometimes we think we have to you do need to do programs with fidelity, but you also need to figure out how things layer in together, I guess, and work together with what you're already doing. So it's not right. More difficult to implement.
Yeah, makes sense. Yeah. So when you think about parents or caregivers, right, they are so important as part of this team, right, supporting students. So what resources are available to your families to support their children's mental health?
We have a wellness committee, and one of a strong parent advocate runs that, and it's really good that she helps our assistant principal run that. She also happens to be a member of our school board, so that's good too. But that is one resource where we've sent her to different conferences, and she's been able to bring some things back. So we have a speaker coming from, I think he's from the University of Iowa. It's either Iowa or Iowa State, so don't quote me on that, but he's coming in April, and he's providing training for our staff and for parents on just wellness in general. And it focuses a little bit more on the social media side of things and how to help kids navigate that and how to help parents navigate that. So that's what we try to do, something. We also, with Rachel's Challenge, had a parent component to that as well. In addition, our continuum has people who can help connect resources, which I think is really important because sometimes parents get overwhelmed. Even if they happen to be involved with the Department of Human Services, they might have somebody helping them navigate some things, but they might not. But sometimes if you give a parent a list and say, well, call this person and this person, it's very frustrating sometimes if you don't know what you're asking for. So our student navigator and the social workers also help navigate some of those resources. And then Green Hills AEA has a resource navigator, so we use her a lot, just not necessarily with our local resources, but maybe regional resources. And then again, that Southwest Iowa Mental Health region we use. So we also, our school-based therapy piece can help with families that have insurance, that don't have insurance, and that have larger, smaller needs. So we try to fit. That's another continuum in itself. So we partner with Family Connections, Therapy Choice, or Therapy Works, and Fletcher Counseling, and they come in kind of different days of the week in different buildings. And they will do pro bono if we needed them to, but we also, our partnership with the MSW through Green Hills is no insurance is needed. So we just try to figure out what resources those students need and parents need. Other examples are Boys Town, Behavioral Health In-Home Services, or BHIS Services, Department of Human Services. If a family would happen to be homeless, we have a connection there as well. So we try to connect them with them. So there's lots of resources, but if you're not familiar with them or don't know them, we have maybe our navigator is probably our best. I'm kind of talking in circles here, but our navigator is our best person because they can help the parent not have to feel alone in that situation.
Yeah. You know, sometimes it's just overwhelming and you don't know, you see all these resources, but you don't know which resource is best. So having that navigator sounds like it's a real plus for the families to have that support.
Yes, it definitely is. And, she does many other things during the day as well.
So, Jenny, are you aware of other innovative practices or different approaches that schools might be adopting to help enhance the mental health continuums services for students?
I mentioned just the restorative practices, and it is definitely an investment. I think our continuum is something that's somewhat innovative, doesn't cost a lot of money, and really you can just do with whatever you currently have. It's just a way of organizing your current system. I think also something that doesn't seem innovative but seems easy, but it's not always, is just creating collaboration with the mental health agencies that you already have within your region or within your own town. I do know one of the therapy groups that we work with, Family Connections, started out in, we started with them in Council Bluffs. We were the very first school-based therapy they did, and we built that model together, and it was great. And now she has schools that are in Des Moines, and they're based out of Council Bluffs in Omaha. So that, just finding ways to connect with someone, and Lindsay Lynn, the coordinator of the school-based therapy, I mean, they have come from Council Bluffs. Now they have an office in Avoca and in two or three other towns around us just because of the need. So making that connection is an innovative approach, because then many of those bigger entities don't really know what your need is. So being an advocate, I guess, is an innovative approach. And sometimes that's hard to do.
Yeah. Yeah. Appreciate that. Sometimes those, like you said, those approaches don't cost a lot of money. And so it's right, reaching out to those resources we have in our communities and don't even realize sometimes that they're there. So.
Yes, many people want to help. They just don't know how either. Either way, like we don't know who to ask and they don't know how to help. So,
right, right, sure. So what are some of those common challenges that you believe schools face in providing services to students, mental health services?
Sure. I would say being in a rural area is just a challenge with access to resources in general. We're lucky in Harlan. We have a hospital. We have behavioral health services within reach. I don't know that there's, just in the state of Iowa alone, that there's enough high-level mental health resources for short-term and long-term concerns with students. So if you got down to the point where you needed a bed or just some inpatient services, that's very few and far between, especially for rural settings. I think also just that we talked about it before, but the mental health stigma is sometimes a challenge. Again, harder a little bit in a smaller town because trust and confidentiality are a little bit difficult to pertain. And then I feel there's a misperception with social emotional learning, and it has been tied to critical race theory and many other things. And really, truly, that is not how social emotional learning started. So if you mention social emotional learning, people think it's a political term, and it absolutely is not. Social emotional learning is just teaching kids how to get along with each other and work well. And, you know, we need to know that as adults oftentimes too. But I think that's sometimes a barrier. And what do you call it? So we're doing the same thing, but calling it wellness, you know, critical race theory and other pieces that are maybe politically challenged are not involved in our social emotional learning by any means.
Yeah. Yeah. Thank you for sharing that. You already touched on this a little bit, but maybe there's more that you'd like to share. So partnership, you have several partnerships throughout your continuum and or collaborations. Is there any more that you'd like to share with our listeners around those partnerships and collaborations?
One of the things that's unique to us is our partnership with the juvenile court district. So we get school-based interventionists, and that flows through the Green Hills AEA, but many districts that are in the juvenile court district 4, every juvenile court district gets the same amount of money allocated to them. And our district is the only one that truly puts it back out for prevention services. Many might hire one or two people. Ours uses that money. And so we partner with them. So we pay, it's a grant service. So we pay per day for a school-based interventionist through the Green Hills AEA, basically through a grant through the mental health or the juvenile court. But that is a very unique thing. And then it's been going on for 25 years. And I know a couple other juvenile court districts, I think, are finally looking at how to spread their money and make a bigger impact on stopping adjudication with younger students. So that is good. We also have really good partnerships with our emergency management system and our sheriff's department. We have a school resource officer who is wonderful with our kids. And I would say he's probably somewhere part on that continuum. He's very much a part of all of our daily work with kids. The Scanlon Center for School-Based Mental Health through the University of Iowa is a good partner too. They have great resources. That's another one I should have mentioned for the resources. We're a teammates mentoring school. So that is big too. That helps with many kids who might just need an extra adult. And then in a different way, our IJAG programs, and we have an Avenue Scholars program, help our high school students navigate many different things after high school, but also just those extra social emotional things. They have an extra adult that's helping watch over them. So they're great partners too. But I think I mentioned most of the others. Just yeah.
Yeah. You have a lot of partners. It takes a village, doesn't it, Jenny?
Yes, it does. Yes, it does.
You've mentioned this a lot too. So the AEA is a partner with Harlan, with you all, in multiple different ways, it sounds like. Is there anything more you'd want to add around the Green Hills AEA and how that all fits into your continuum?
Sure, they're a huge part. They also help us with their behavior team or their autism team when it comes down to additional things that we're struggling with individual students. We share and collaborate a therapeutic classroom, Rising Hope Academy, that's in our building now. So that's another partnership we have with Green Hills AEA. So they do a great deal with us, and we really appreciate that.
Yeah. You know, everybody always wonders about how to fund something like mental health services for students. We all know we have limited funding. So how do you fund your continuum?
Sure. We use different funding streams. So district funding is mostly through at-risk dollars. And we have five counselors for, throughout the district. And then our two student navigators are at-risk dollars. We operationally share with for our MSW with Green Hills AEA. The juvenile court grant, as I mentioned, for our school-based interventionist. And those are really reasonable things. You know, you pay by the day. So we have someone for 4 days, but it's very reasonable to have her because it's part grant funded. And then the AEA collaboration, the community resource navigator that we have access to, the SBI, we do pay a little bit for in our MSW, we operationally share, but pretty much come out as a wash. And then free services are all of those school-based intervention or school-based counseling and therapy pieces, because we just provide them an office space, and then they do their own billing and they do everything else with the parent on their own. And if they can't do that, then we figure out a way to help them. But one stipulation we do have with, and I should have mentioned this before, Lisa, that if we do use school-based therapy and they're taking students out of the school day, it really has to have some kind of effect within the school day. So are their behaviors affecting? We really try to keep, if you're going to take them out of an hour a day out of classes, it has to somehow connect with how it's going to better something at school. So if it's a home issue and we're not seeing any issues at school, then we really try to say, well, maybe you should do your therapy outside of school, because we don't want to disrupt what's already working at school. So that's something a little different. But so basically those are free services, and we just have MOUs with those agencies, and in that MOU they agree to do some pro bono, so we don't pay for that. They also agree, we unfortunately had a student death last year, and many of them were on site to help us with any crisis planning we needed. And that's another plug for the AEA. The AEA team was there as well and helped us for an entire week. It was great to have their services as well.
Yeah. So how do you measure the effectiveness, Jenny, of this continuum that you have? How do you know it's making a difference?
Sure. So we use those three measures, so attendance, behavior, and academic data. And, you know, the overall goal is just to reduce your deuce and your trifecta list to show success. But that shows in a much bigger picture when your average daily attendance is up and your behavior referrals are down and your academic data and your DNF list or your students that are proficient goes up and your DNF list goes down. So it's also reflected in our graduation rate and many other pieces, but we try to look at those three and see overall how, and then there's also lots of anecdotal data. Teachers will say they're so much better in the classroom today, you know, or this week.
Right. Yeah, for sure. Mm-hmm. So Jenny, if you were to give advice to an administrator, a fellow colleague who would like to start something like this in their district, what advice do you have for our listeners?
I would just say to start with what you have. You don't have to do anything crazy or big or expensive. Just begin with what you have and create a chart with just supports that you currently provide for students. And then I'm happy to share. They can call me. I'm happy to share any resources they need, but we just filled out basically it's just a chart. So it has what MTSS tier is this, what is the service and the scope and the reason we would use it, determine the number of students who could receive this, define the parameters for the consent. Do you need to have parent permission or not? Understand what funding is needed to provide for that service, and then create a process for referring. Most importantly, I think too, just to make sure that you have a team, whether you have a continuum or not, you need to have some kind of a student success team that's looking at data on a regular basis, just to understand not just academic needs, but many other needs of students, and to understand the needs that the parents might have as well.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, thank you. You are doing great work for kids there at Heartland. So thank you so much for your leadership and for doing what's right and doing what's best for students. Thank you for devoting your time to learn about Heartland's continuum of supports. To further your professional learning, consider one of SAI's upcoming workshops ranging from Generative AI for School Leaders on April 25th to Beyond Compliance from Investigation to Resolution on June 6th. Check out the events page on the SAI website for more information on these and other offerings.